One of the things that you find Satan does, Satan works with those who are closest to the truth. He doesn't worry about the world. He doesn't really care about the world and about those things that are being done by others. Right now, he's concentrating and giving opportunities to those that he has called out. And Satan is right there because he knows that Yahweh is picking out, he's choosing a people, those that are called. Many are called, but few are chosen. So one of the things that he works on is to confuse and bring messages, thoughts, and concepts contrary to what Yahweh wants us to do. One of the first places he starts, of course, is getting people to realize that Sunday is not the day he wants to be worshipped. He wants to be worshipped on the Sabbath, commemoration of his creative power. But then as we move on, we find there's another one that when people get a little deeper into the Word and they start keeping the feast days and realize that these will be kept not only now, but will also be kept in the kingdom. That allows Satan, of course, to confuse people, to get them a little stirred up and put somebody in somebody's mind whatever he wants, and generally it's something that is wrong. And then he gives them the spirit that they're right, and we have a lot of problems. My purpose for mentioning this is that one of the first things that we do when we start keeping the annual feast days, all seven of them, is that we try to follow what the Bible says. And there are those who somehow can twist things around and maybe innocently do it. But there is some things that we have to study and keep studying. And one of those is the simple thing called Passover. Passover, of course, is the first of the feast days, annual feast days. And then from that, we have the days of unleavened bread. And Satan has confused the world by what day do we do it, when do we do it, how do we count for it, and so on and so forth. But today I'd like to talk about what is in the cup. Wine or grape juice, this always comes up, ever since I've started to keep the feast days some 30 years ago. This was always a question. And we find that there are some misconceptions that are even actually in some of the dictionaries and commentaries. But the interesting thing is, when we first started, I was convinced we ought to keep wine as what was in the cup. I've had to change my thinking after going into a deeper study of this. And I want to share that with you because maybe some of these things you've never considered or heard of before. But basically, the argument goes that grape juice is something that ferments rather rapidly, and it's almost impossible to keep grape juice as juice from the fall of the year, September, October, along in there, until the following spring when you would keep Passover, which would be probably in March or April. That in that time, grape juice would spoil, turn into wine, and so you might as well keep wine because that's what it's going to be. Well, it's not exactly true. Not exactly true, and I'll get to that in a minute. But I want to just explain the grapes and the grape juice. Ripe grapes carry what is known as albumin within the grape, and this helps to make the grape, helps the grape ferment. And fermenting, of course, is actually a breaking down of the character and the constituency of the grape sugars, because the sugars can be turned into alcohol, and that is what wine is. But basically, I should read this, that it says, I picked this up out of the encyclopedia, so I hope I got it right. It said, fermentation can be prevented by separating the albumin, which is in the grape, and it contains the fermenting elements. And it says, by careful procedures, the juice of the grape can be separated from the fermenting pulp, that is the skin, which is on the outside, and the seeds. This was done anciently either by filtration or gentle pressing. Generally, they found that when you harvest the grapes, you put them in a big wine vat, and you pile them in there, and then in the ancient days, they used to get in there with their feet and tread these things and squeeze the juice out of the grape. But actually, the best part of the grape juice would be that it, which comes out first without anybody putting any weight on them, just the weight of the other grapes on top of them squeeze out the juice, and it's relatively pure juice and has a minimum of fermenting agents within it. Because the grapes have the yeast cells on the outside, on the skins as well. And when you mix those up, why, a lot of this gets into the juice itself. Usually it's called the must, M-U-S-T, is the juice that comes out of the grapes first. But also, contrary to belief, ripe grapes left in the sun, on the vine in the warm sun, will not ferment. They simply dry up and become raisins. It is common to find in California that grapes are stacked in long windrows, just like here in the Midwest we see farmers with their long rows of hay. And the grapes are stacked like that and allowed to sit there, and they don't ferment. In fact, Hastings Dictionary of the Bible on Volume 2 and page 32 under Food comments, "The best grapes were dried in the sun into raisins, which were compressed into zimuk or cakes." And I want you to turn with me to the book of 1 Samuel, 1 Samuel 25. It's rather interesting here that we see this was done way back there at the time of the ancient worthies, including David. But turn back to 1 Samuel 25, and here we have... we're down here in verse 14. Abigail, Nabal's wife, is interested in David. I don't want to take a lot of time with this. Let's zero in on verse 18. It says, "Then Abigail," we're in 1 Samuel 25:18. "Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves and 2 bottles of wine and 5 sheep ready dressed, 5 measures of parched corn, and 100 clusters of raisins." You notice they had raisins already back in those days. In fact, what this is, in addition to that, 200 cakes of figs, and laid them on the donkeys. She was going to bring food to David. And included with that was raisins and also these cakes that come out of the dried part of the fruit that is left to dry in the sun. And they weren't spoiled. It's rather interesting. The Britannica Encyclopedia says in volume 23 and on page 666 of all things, it says, "The surface of grapes are covered with large numbers of yeasts, molds, and bacteria, including the true wine yeast. Grape juice would ferment with the aid of the wild yeast, but it is inoculated with a selected strain of wine yeast after adding sulfur dioxide to suppress other organisms." So sulfur dioxide, which is you can burn sulfur, and the smoke is usually used for killing the bacteria and so on. And then we find that also some yeast cells are in the grape, but most of them are on the outside, on the skins. And how did they get there? Well, they're always in the air. No matter where you are, you have these yeast cells always in the air, always ready to go on the grapes. And it's an interesting thing. You can wash and wash, but the more you wash, it doesn't really do any well, any good. Well, the next thing we want to look at is the leavening process. And as you know, the Bible talks about leaven is actually a breaking down of food particles, usually sugars, break down into alcohol and carbon dioxide. And we find here that the fizz of carbon dioxide, we have that in soda pops, you know, it has a fizz. What they actually do is pump carbon dioxide into the water, into the juice, whatever they're making into the drink, and it is compressed in there in the water. Basically, when you open it up and it fizzes, that's the carbon dioxide escaping. Carbon dioxide doesn't hurt anything. It's a byproduct, of course, of most things, but it's the carbon monoxide that people don't want to have take in too much in their lungs, because that can be lethal. Carbon dioxide, CO2, is okay. Now, we have here that about the action of yeast, and I want to go into that a little bit more. It says some of the writings that I picked up here, it says, these cells obtain their nourishment from the sugar, which allows them to grow and multiply. So the yeast cells are actually living plant organisms that live on the skin of the grape, and they get their nourishment from the sugar that might be around the grape, and that's how they happen to grow, just like a mold. You find also that as the waste products are broken down, or the sugars are broken down, alcohol and carbon dioxide, of course, are the two, but carbon dioxide is given off as a gas in kind of a bubbling action. And when the concentration of carbon dioxide or alcohol reaches 15%, it kills the yeast cells, so then it stops the work. But the yeast cells themselves feed on the sugar, on the sugar that is in the grape, on the grape sugar. And we find that there are two products given off, alcohol and carbon dioxide. In the college textbook, Health for Living by John Sutton and Webster, it's a McGraw-Hill book, in the 1966 edition on page 378, it states, because beverage alcohol is oxidized and energy is liberated, it sometimes is classified as a food. However, it is a mistake to classify alcohol with such important foods as proteins, fats, carbohydrates, vitamins, and minerals. Alcohol cannot create new tissue, nor can it repair injured tissue. It has no protective or regulating functions, as have vitamins and minerals. Hence, alcohol can never be recommended as a food. And certainly people have the wrong idea. They say also that when grape juice sits and it ferments and turns to alcohol, it gets rid of all the impurities. Well, that's dead wrong, because it gets turned into alcohol, and that is not a beneficial drink for anyone. You don't get any food value out of it. And then we have Yahshua himself says that his flesh is meat indeed, and his blood is drink indeed. So he added that unless one eats of his body and drinks of his blood, we have no life in us. And the question that I have to raise here is, if drinking alcohol, which has no food value, how can you expect that to represent the blood that, or the blood that's in the cup, if it has no food value, cannot repair tissue, it does not sustain life, it doesn't do anything but affect the spirit or the attitude of the person. It simply doesn't measure up as a nourishing food. Studying about grapes, they're recognized as a good food, and the juice of the grape is the healthful drink. The sugars from the grape are packed with energy, and they carry a distinguished taste. Grape juice contains vitamins which stimulate the life-giving processes in the human body. And we read here in Leviticus, it says, the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it to you upon the altar to make an atonement for your souls, for it is the blood that makes atonements for the soul. That's in Leviticus 17:11. So the Bible talks about a blood that is nourishing, and certainly we should take the symbol of the blood that is nourishing and not something that isn't. Also, we read in Deuteronomy 12 and verse 23, it says, there, only be sure that you eat not the blood, for the blood is the life, that you may not eat the life with the flesh. So then we have the Bible itself telling us that the blood symbol that we want to ingest is not something that is not beneficial or giving life. Generally, you find that the wine has different words from the Hebrew that are translated wine. Actually, there are a number of them. But the one we want to look at is one called Yayin. And it generally means fermented drink, and it also means that it is alcohol. Yayin is a strong drink. So the question now is, if we talk about Yayin in the Hebrew, what is Yayin used for in the Bible? What are the examples that it gives us? What does it do to the human when he drinks it? Well, let's take a look at one of them here in the book of Psalms, Psalm 104 and verse 15. It says, "And wine," in the Hebrew again, it's Yayin, "that makes glad the heart of man, and oil to make his face to shine, and bread which strengthens man's heart." In Proverbs 20 and verse 1, we read about wine. It says, "Yayin is a mocker, strong drink is raging. Whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise." Here's another one in 2 Samuel, chapter 13 and verse 28. It says, "Absalom had commanded his servants, saying, 'Mark you now when Ammon's heart is merry with wine.'" My point is this: as you read about Yayin's use, the use of wine, it's used for a happy occasion, something joyful, merriment, a celebration, a wedding, things like this. I want to read another one here. This is Deuteronomy 14:26. It says, "You shall bestow that money for whatever your soul lusts after, for oxen, for sheep, or for wine, yayin, or for strong drink." I think generally most people think that is shekar, because that's usually mentioned together with yayin. And it says that you may drink whatever your soul lusts after, strong drink, whatever your soul desires, and you shall eat there before Yahweh your Elohim, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. And that's in Deuteronomy 14:26. Now, that's talking about the feast day. It's a happy time, the Feast of Tabernacles especially. Sometimes people kind of, you know, get talking about grape juice and wine. I used to think it was wine. In fact, I had to eat my words, because I found out that was not really what the Bible taught. And so people then say, "Well, are you against anybody drinking wine?" I just read the verse that said that's allowed. But drunkenness is what is not allowed. And you don't get drunk on grape juice. The fermentation of grapes, I want to read this too. "There is an erroneous teaching that the grape juice is purified by fermentation and is purified when it's turned to wine. We are told the fermentation process kills or takes out the natural leaven, which is said to be in the grape. The fermentation gets rid of the leaven and thereby makes the wine an acceptable symbol of Yahshua's blood of the Savior." But that's a wrong concept. Grape growers know that they can leave grapes in the wine in the warm sun in the cool nights, and they won't ferment. In fact, if they're dry, they'll just dry up and shrivel up and become raisins. They don't, ferment and turn into wine. But all of this is kind of new to a lot of people. In the Britannica Encyclopedia 1963 edition, it says, "The surfaces of ripe grapes are covered with large numbers of yeasts, molds, and bacteria, including true wine yeast. Grape juice would ferment with the aid of the wild yeast, but it is usually inoculated with a selected strain of wine yeast after adding sulfur dioxide to suppress other organisms," talking about the preservation of grape juice. And the Britannica says the yeast cells are on the grapes and on the skin. Well, how did they get there? Well, simply by being in the air, and we have them around all the time. So there's a problem. You try to clean them up, and the more you try to do it, the more seem to come in from the air. But the leavening, again, the sugar is broken down to alcohol and carbon dioxide, and that turns the sugars into something that is not healthy and does not at all create the atmosphere of replacing tissue or providing life. Now, on the other hand, grape sugar does. Anyway, in the Old Testament, the question is, when Yahshua suddenly had a cup, where did that cup come from? You see, in the Old Testament, you don't find that there is a cup at all used in the Passover service. It's not there. Now, they did have drink offerings, excuse me, although you know this too, that if anyone brought a drink offering in the Old Testament, the priest didn't drink it because Leviticus condemned his drinking, that he could not drink wine in the tabernacle. And so the drink offering was usually splashed either on the base of the altar. There's an argument there. Some say it was poured on the top of the altar where they were having the offering. But most of them say that it represents something else, and it was splashed on the base of the altar. But the priest never drank it. Anyway, I was going to mention some of these words that are used so that you know that what we have here is a booklet that Chris tells me he's almost got ready. And this wasn't just the thing to look at grape juice and wine and let it go at that. There are a number of words that are used in the Old Testament, 10 words actually, that are referred to or translated as wine. The first one I mentioned already is yayin. And there's the next one is tirosh. Tirosh is usually considered to be the first that comes off of a wine press. It's rather interesting, you know, that they call these things a wine press when they don't press out wine, they press out juice. Should be juice. But, well, cider press is the same way with apples. You don't get cider right off of the dripping out of the vat, you know. You get apple juice, and that turns into cider if you let it ferment. But tirosh is the fresh grape juice just squeezed out, generally without being trodden. You have shekar, which goes with yayin a lot. Shekar, I think generally we would translate it beer. It can be grain, it can be barley, it can be wheat, it can be different grains. And it's intensely alcoholic. It's made from grain and dates even. Another word is shamar. And that actually is translated wine. There's another one, gath. Gath, as you probably know, means wine press. The word Gethsemane means the place of the wine press, because there were grapes growing up there. There's another one, a couple more words. Sobe means drink or drunken. Kamer is wine as being fermented. Kamar is a sticky liquid. And it's usually made by boiling. Excuse me. And there's asis, also is thought to be fresh grape juice as it comes out of the vat. And also another one that's wine is enob, but it's not used all that much. Basically, you see, the use of these words is basically to let you know that there are other words that we looked at, but they're not really... They don't enter into the equation. We're trying to find out what was in the cup. Now, I wanted to mention, too, that the cup that Yahshua used might have been from the four cups that the Jews say they have at the Passover table. And they always have one left over for Eliyah, and it's the fourth cup. And that never was drunk from it. It sat on the table, but nobody drank from it. And some of the scholars contend that maybe this is the one that Yahshua used when he gave it to his people. Interestingly enough, the Jews themselves say that if that cup was used, it was unfermented. Most people don't know that. They think it was wine, but it was unfermented. The best drink of all, water. Thank you. Excuse me. In the New Testament, only two words are used for the word wine. One is glucose, and the other one is oinos. Glucose is new wine, sometimes when it just comes out of the vat, they call it new wine. And as a matter of fact, when you read, for example, Matthew 9:17, where Yahshua said, "Neither do men put new wine into old goatskins." He probably meant juice. He didn't necessarily mean new wine. And he talks about the wineskins would burst and everything would leak out and so on. But we do know that in the New Testament, oinos is also used as a time of, as a wine for merriment, for joy, for weddings, for things like this. Question is, when you take the Passover, is that to celebrate something happy? Or are you remembering the death of all the firstborn back in Egypt? And the fact that Yahshua died that time, is that a happy time for us? It should be one of solemn introspection and looking at yourself and your life and that, have you done the things you're supposed to do? And so Yain would not fit there. And you find here, for example, in 1 Timothy 3:8 that Paul wrote, "Be not drunk with wine, oinos, wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit," in 5:18. And then also he wrote in Timothy, he said, "Likewise must the deacons be serious, not double-tongued, not given to much wine, oinos, not greedy for a filthy lucre." But here we have Yahshua's Yahshua's example and his guide. And we find there that as they were eating, he took bread and blessed it and broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, "Take, eat, this is my body." And he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them. And he said, "Drink ye all of it, for this is the blood of the new testament, which is shed for many for the remission of sins." Now, interestingly enough, he goes on and says in this one pericope in Matthew, and it's repeated in the other ones, but he says, "I will not drink henceforth of the fruit of the vine until the day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." So he said, "I will no longer drink of this fruit of the vine." You know, in all the evangels, he never once says the cup has wine. He doesn't call it wine. He calls it the fruit of the vine. The fruit, you see, would be the produce as it comes out of the vine. And you find that this is actually what he meant. The juice that came with the fresh grape. You might think that's kind of funny. I've had people say to me, "Are you trying to tell me that they're supposed to drink grape, grapes without the juice, just the whole grape?" Well, turn to me with me to Genesis chapter 40. Most people weren't even aware of this when I talked about this before. Genesis chapter 40. And is this fruit of the vine in the cup, is that something brand new, or is that something back in the Old Testament that they were familiar with? And the Jews would know that. But here in chapter 40, notice verse 11. It says, it's talking about the butler's dream. And he's telling the dream to Joseph. And he says, "And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup." How about that? There's the fruit of the vine. He took the grapes and pressed them into the cup, and I gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand. So squeezing grapes having grapes in the cup is nothing new. And it appears that this is what Yahshua was talking about when he said the fruit of the vine. But here's the point. In every instance where this is used, the Greek word is genema, and it simply means produce or product of the vine. It doesn't mean a byproduct like wine would be a byproduct, a fermented product. But he says he will no longer drink of this fruit of the vine till he drinks it new in the kingdom. The question is, does he drink wine sometime even before he leaves this earth? Well, he does. He drinks wine, but he doesn't drink fruit of the vine. In Mark chapter 15, verse 22, he was offered oinon, actually, it should be oinos. Oinon being the ending of the accusative case is why it's there. But he also had myrrh with it to deaden the pain. The second time he was offered vinegar, which is called oxos. Oxos is really sour wine. Sometimes it's translated vinegar, but it's actually the cheap wine that the soldiers would drink. It was cheap, and nobody wanted it because it was already starting to turn to vinegar, but the soldiers would drink it to get the same effect from good wine, the alcohol content, as it would from the cheap stuff. So they bought the cheap stuff that they could afford. So he was offered vinegar or this oxos in Matthew 27:33. In Luke 23:36, he was again offered sour wine, oxos, and he turned it down. In John 19:28-30, we read there, he said, "I thirst." And when Yahshua had received the vinegar, he said, "It is finished." He bowed his head and expired. So he drank wine, the last thing he did before he died. But it wasn't the fruit of the vine. So he said, "I won't drink of this fruit of the vine until I drink it new in the kingdom." So we're going to have to prepare to keep Passover in the kingdom in a new and living way. So Yahshua drank wine. And you'll notice that the Bible recognizes the grape juice as being the blood of the grape. Turn with me to Genesis chapter 49. Genesis chapter 49 and verse 11. We read there, talking about the great blessings that are going to come and so on and so forth. "Binding his foal unto the vine and his ass's colt unto the choice vine." Is speaking here about the vines being so plentiful in the land that they could tie their animals up to grapevines because they were all over the place. And then it says, "And he washed his garments in wine and his clothes in the blood of the grapes." Here it says the grapes resemble blood in Genesis 49 and verse 11. As we move on down, the blessings given to Judah and so on are also called the pure blood of the grapes. In the Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verse 14, there we have the blessings given to the people, and it says that the juice, or the butter, I'll start with that, butter of the cows, milk of the sheep, fat of the lambs, rams of the breed of Bashan, and goats with the fat of kidneys of wheat, and you did drink the pure blood of the grape. So the Bible talks about that being blood, and you find that the pure juice of the grape was given to the priest in tithes and offerings. The reason the pure juice was given to the priest, because he was not to take wine into the tabernacle. But in Deuteronomy 18 and verse 3 to 4, it reads, "And this shall be the priest's due from the people, from those who offer a sacrifice, whether it be an ox or a sheep, and they shall give unto the priest the shoulder and the two cheeks and the maw. The first fruit also of your corn, of your wine, and of your oil, and the first fleece of the sheep thou shalt give him." So the first fruits of the wine, of course, means the grape juice that they first have. And that word there is tirosh. Well, we can get into a lot of this. But I want to mention something else here. I hope that if you haven't been able to grasp all of this, what I've been working with here, that you will understand that when we have the booklet published and ready to go, you'll be able to read some of these things and hopefully help you to come to deeper understanding of what is in the cup. But one other one that I want to get into, and this is usually comes up sooner or later, and we have an answer here, I believe, and that is what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 11. And Paul didn't even say what was in the cup himself. He talked about the cup. He talked about Passover. He talked about Yahshua. He said, make sure that you examine yourself, whether you be in the faith. And he talked about all that. Not once did he say anything about wine being in the cup. Not once. But notice, he says, for example, in 1 Corinthians 11, he says, "In the same manner, Yahshua took the cup when he had supped, saying, this cup is the New Testament in my blood. This do as you drink it in remembrance of me." And he goes on to talk about it. But we do have a problem here in verse 20 and 21. And that's in 1 Corinthians 11. It says, "When you therefore come together into one place, this is not to eat the Master's Supper. For in eating, everyone takes his own supper ahead of another. One is hungry and another drunken." And they say, aha, you see that? They're drinking too much. They got drunk. They had to have wine. Well, there's a fallacy in that reasoning, because the word metho means to be drunk. And the argument really is, the word is compared to fullness of food. They ate all they could eat, and then they drank all they could drink, is really what it means, to be drunken. It doesn't really say that they drank wine. Adam Clark, in his commentary, points out that the people came together, and it appears brought their provisions with them. Some had much, others had less. Some ate to excess, others had scarcely enough themselves. One was hungry, and another was drunken, and was drunken and filled to the full. So that is the sense. It compares the fullness of food to the fullness of drink. It doesn't necessarily mean that. But Paul is very careful here. He doesn't say that's wine. But people sometimes make the comparison and think maybe that's really what it is. The big question comes in preserving grapes. Can you preserve grapes? There are actually, I go into a study that I remember we had a number of years ago, back in the 70s, where we wrote to different companies that produced grape juice and some that produced wine. We wrote to each one. And we got the answers back, and the questions were basically like this. There were three questions. If the juice of the grapes were properly sealed and set aside, would it be still grape juice, or would it turn to wine? Would it ferment? And how much time would it take? Is it possible, next question, to avert fermentation that is took place 2,000 years ago? Next question, we are informed that grape juice could have been preserved for a period of 9 or more months, placing the freshly squeezed juice in wineskins, sealing them with beeswax. Is this possible? Well, as you might guess, I think there were four or five of each, evenly divided. And the grape juice supplier said, yes, grape juice could be kept there. In fact, one of them went so far as to say that in the Holy Land, that the grape juice is 35 bricks, whatever that means. But he says that contains a lot of sugar, and that would preserve that juice itself. And anyway, it was evenly divided. The grape juice manufacturer, supplier, said, yes, you could preserve grape juice. And the wine people said, no, it would ferment. And what amazed me is when I read it in Josephus. In Josephus, I want you to listen to this. And you know the fortress Masada, that big prominence where Herod had it was his hideaway. If you ever had to escape, that's where he's going to go. Well, the Jews went up there, and the Romans came up, and they built a parapet, a big way they could clamber up there and overtake the Jews. Interestingly enough, the Jews all killed themselves, as you probably know. They all committed suicide, except for a woman and I think three or four little children. She hid and didn't kill herself, but they all they elected one man to kill 10 people, and then another one killed him, and finally there was nobody left. The last one committed suicide. But anyway, they wanted to show the Romans that they weren't defeated, that actually they killed themselves rather than be prisoners and slaves of the Romans. So they all killed themselves. Well, here comes the Romans up there. And first I want to read what the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia says. Unfermented grape juice is a very difficult thing to keep without the aid of modern antiseptic precautions. Its preservation in the warm and not over cleanly conditions of ancient Palestine was impossible. That's what they said. Now, I want you to read what Josephus says. He says, when the Romans came up there, he said, here was laid up corn in large quantities, and as such as would subsist men for a long time. Here also was wine and oil in abundance, with all kinds of pulse and dates heaped together, all which Eleazar found there. And when he and his Sicarii got possession of the fortress by treachery, these fruits were also fresh. The fruits were also fresh and full ripe, and not inferior to such fruits lately laid in or newly laid in. So he says the fruits were all fresh, just like fresh ones. Although they were a little short of 100 years from laying up these provisions by Herod, the place was taken by the Romans. No, indeed, it wasn't taken, but the Romans got possession. of these fruits that were left, and they found them not corrupted at all, that while, nor should the cause of their enduring so long. In other words, they ate these fruits that had been up there laid by Herod, and they were still preserved. So anyway, there are basically four things that people can do, and they do it over there yet, to preserve grape juice. Boil the juice down to a syrup, and then after a while, just like they do even today, make it a concentrate. After a while, add water to it, and you could drink grape juice that would be made from concentrate. And they would separate the fermentable pulp by fermentation. And also they could put it in cold storage, put it in cold water. And the other thing was sulfur fumigation. Well, anyway, this is rather an interesting study, and I hope that when we talk about grape juice, people have a better understanding of the fact that grape juice could be preserved in spite of what the encyclopedia wants us to believe. We know that doing things Yahweh's way and using the right thing is very important. We don't want to use something that Yahshua said that he would not drink anymore until he would drink it new in the kingdom, and we can safely assume, I believe, that it was grape juice. Well, there are more studies like this that we hope to do, and I hope that this one has been a help to you to perceive what we find the Bible says and what we can go by and look and learn and seek more of Yahweh's truth, that we live the truth and do the things the way that we're supposed to do according to the Scriptures. So until then, may Yahweh bless you and keep you all.